Well, greetings, I'm Elmer Witt, I'm a campus minister at Governor State University right outside of Chicago. That's what I do for a living anyway. I'm lots of other things besides that. An ordained clergyman for one thing, husband indeed, a writer, a lover, many other things, and a friend of some folks. I'm interested in friendship for a variety of reasons that I'll be sharing along the line. But because I think it is not explored in very much depth, I wondered if you would be willing to participate with me in a couple of exercises that would get us to the point where I think we can talk about friendship. Now, that may be a manipulative thing, but in order to make it not that, I'd like to suggest to you that whatever I'm going to ask you to do, it's very agreeable with me that you don't participate if you don't feel like it. But I would like you to, because I think it would help us get to talking about some of the areas of friendship that I sort of think are important. And obviously, not only for young people, I just did a stint with them. I think friendship is pretty crucial in their life, but for all of us, because the kind of friendship I'm thinking about and talking about is at a obviously more than passing acquaintance kind of relationship. So I will invite you to do some things with me, if you don't mind. And it will mean some moving around, but you can participate long distance up there if you want. I'll suggest how you may want to do it. Have any of you ever participated in what's called a living continuum? Have you ever done that kind of an exercise? Yeah, let me explain it to you, maybe you'll see. You know what a continuum is? You know, a line, and sort of imagine that. Like if this pole were 0 and this pole were 100 and this were a continuum on how you feel about seatbelts, then if you were really sold on seatbelts, you know, you put your seatbelt on before you get in the car, then you'd be down there at 100 over there. And if, on the other hand, you heard some things that happened to people who had seatbelts on and you wouldn't want to be caught dead in one, you'd be down at 0. And if you hadn't made up your mind on this crucial seatbelt issue, you'd be here in the middle at 50. Or you might be sort of inclined towards seatbelts at 75 or maybe not at 25. So if you were on a human continuum, you wouldn't be evaluating, at least in this session, seatbelts good or bad, but how do you feel about them? You're really sold on them, you don't like them, or you're somewhere in the middle. That would be a human continuum. I would ask you to take a stand on this imaginary line. Is that clear? So I'd like to ask you to do that on a couple of other issues. And the way you folks can do it, if you want, you can choose a point on a line and we'll ask you where you are, all right? You can choose 50, 100, or whatever it is. Or you can actually come down if you feel like it. That's up to you, all right? The first one, if you would, and David, you can tell us too just where you are, okay? You won't have to be munching around unless you feel like it. The first one is, whatever comes to your mind when I say to you, how do you feel today? Right now, about where you grew up. Now that might mean a house or a town or some people or whatever. Whatever comes to your mind when I say where you grew up. If you're really sold on it, we'll use this imaginary line up here, of 100, you'd stand around up there. If you didn't like it at all, you were down at 0 or somewhere in between. How do you feel today about where you grew up? And that could be the different stages of your life. As you feel today, and it could be anything. It could be place, it could be at different times, you maybe lived at different places, could be house, could be parents, could be town, anything.
But then your feelings would differ.
Exactly, but you choose.
Oh,
you choose.
You mean the place as it is today, or
back? Whatever you choose. You choose that, too. Okay? You have the choice of making it anything you want. So that's 100 at that one. This is 50 right by the microphone here, and that's 0 down here by that pole. So you can group around numbers if you want. Take a stand wherever you are. Hey, stay there for a moment and tell another person, preferably somebody you don't know. It takes 30 seconds to tell the person why you are where you are on that continuum, why you aren't down here or up there. All right? Have your attention? I'd like to ask a couple of people to share about it. I was down here, I guess I was maybe the lowest down here. I was at a 20 about, like, right over here. When I think about where I grew up, unfortunately, the thing I think of is the school I went to. And my family was neat. My house, I love that house. It's still there. Not many left. And the town was sort of fun. But the school was, in my opinion, really bad. sort of gross teachers, at least my recollection. I could speak in public about age 16 before I ever could speak in front of anybody. And so it was a kind of a bad thing. So I get down there, and that comes back pretty strongly when I think of where I grew up. It's not the whole story, but it's part of it. How about somebody else? Somebody that was toward the other end. Would you be willing to share why you're there? Yeah.
I'm about a 97, I think.
Okay, and why? Want to say? Well,
because I grew up in the Midwest in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and I just think it was a neat... I live on the West Coast right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really love the prairies, and I think my parents... I mean, every family has bad things and good things
sure.
in the person's upbringing, but I just remember it fondly, and when I can go back there,
neat.
I think it's neat to see the prairies. And
thank you much. How about somebody who's sort of in the middle? Want to share? Anyone?
I grew up in a small town in Nebraska. I kind of have mixed emotions. I had a good childhood and
mm-hmm.
a happy family life. But when I think about where I've been since then, I wouldn't want to go back.
Okay.
Again,
so you got mixed feelings now.
Much more.
Okay. How about somebody up there? Tell us where you are. Anyway.
I grew up in Sioux Falls, too.
But where are you on the continuum?
I'm about halfway.
Want to say what?
Because, like, as she said, I love the prairies and I love the area. But at the same time, I wish I would have had a chance to have more recreational opportunities and a more stimulating environment.
Okay. All right. Let's do another one. Pretend for a moment there are only two kinds of people in the world when it comes to going on a trip. The one kind, don't move yet, please. The one kind, when they go on a trip, are highly, highly organized. They know precisely when they're going to leave at 4:27 and a half on Saturday, you know, and they're going to go how many miles? They're going to go exactly 420 miles. They're going to stay in the same motel. They've had that reservation for 6 months now. And that restaurant on the left side of the road where they had good hamburgers, they're going to stop there, and they know exactly when they will be back in order to go pick up the dog at 4:28 in the morning, and all done. That's at one end of the continuum. And the other end of the continuum are the people who are, you know, going to wing it. They're going to leave this afternoon, heading north possibly. So let's say that highly, highly organized would be down here at this end. And not now, we're not saying, how's your family? How do you see yourself when it comes to going on a trip? Highly, highly organized at this pole or winging it down there or somewhere in between. Would you take a stand on that? I hope we don't start any family arguments. Highly organized. Once again, can I have your attention? Let's hear from some folks. Somebody who is down towards this end, highly organized. You want to tell us why? What's so great about being organized when it comes to going on a trip? Anybody?
So we have all the details arranged and we can forget about them.
All right. How about on the other end, somebody that doesn't? What's so great about winging it? How about the people in the middle? Yeah.
Can I share that we're planning a trip to Alaska, and you better be partly organized or you won't get anywhere.
Right.
And a certain amount of it is organized, and some of it is not. But
all right. How about up there? Somebody want to share? Where are you? Tell us where you are.
I'm down like around here, 40.
About 40?
Yeah, somewhere in there. I think that if you're not organized enough, you miss a lot of stuff.
Okay. Anybody else?
40 to 60, depending upon the circumstance.
All right. Yeah. Sure.
In
for business. Pardon?
Your,
yes.
In the midst of your organization, you've got a lot of room for experiences that might be called great.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I'm what?
Runs in front of your car.
Right. I'm lots different on a business trip down there than I am on a vacation trip down here, mm-hmm. just in reaction against that. So I'd be different on that too, okay? A third one, if you don't mind. Again, assume there are two kinds of people in the world. Savers and throwawayers. And if you see yourself as a saver, you're down at this end. If you throw things away, you're down at this end. Where do you see yourself on the continuum of savers and throwawayers? Savers, did I say? Is that it? Said savers. Savers, throw away. Savers, throw away.
If you have a spouse who's a saver, you better be a throw
away. Oh, we're two savers. You can see our house. How about, what's great about savers?
Oh,
that's new.
That I'm still the pantry.
I'm going to use it. I don't. I always imagine I'm going
to
use it.
I used to have to enter the lake.
Well, I was going to say it's how you feel about yourself and whether you decide. I mean, you were saying something. I've saved, now that I think about it, well, I've saved our children's toys for grandchildren later on, but I just about pitched anything else. You know,
that's
I have
great.
Very few things that I've saved other than some souvenirs from high school and a few from college. That's it. You know.
Interesting.
It's great for the real estate.
Yeah, right. We have lived in the same house for 25 years.
That's being a saver right there.
Yeah.
Just being the same house.
Yes, please.
Well, I want to mention that I have boxes and boxes of material I use in teaching, and I save those because I'm always going to use them. Then I bought files that I'm going to use for the things I've saved, but now I'm saving the files.
when you build a second house, to keep it all.
In my experience, people who've gone through the Depression are much more likely to be favored.
Right,
so,
I
remember
right.
Well, maybe so. Well, is that, look at the age.
Yeah.
Is that really so? Well, I wouldn't say.
Well, I didn't go up to the Depression.
Okay, good.
Third one. Third one is it?
Fourth one.
Okay, fourth one. If you had to make up your mind today, if you had to make up your mind today on whether you are pro-Arab or pro-Israel, where would you be? Pro-Arab would be down there, pro-Israel down there, or in the middle, down here. Pro-Arab, pro-Israel. We could spend the rest of the day on this one. We'll come back to it in a moment. Another tougher one, perhaps, and again, remember, you may pass. Listen carefully, though, the way I word this. I'll try to word it accurate. If you believe that young people living together, including intercourse, is usually destructive. I'm not trying to say morally right or wrong at the moment, but usually destructive. Then you could be down at this end if you think that young people living together, unmarried, including intercourse, is not usually destructive. You could be down at that end. Is it clear what I'm asking?
Can I ask you to add a qualifier?
All right.
Is this casual or is this, you know, lasting relationships living together? That's a big difference.
I guess you'd have to define that
for your own self,
all right? I'm not asking what does the church teach. I'm not asking the moral question. I'm asking how you feel about it. It's something part of our society. I'm asking how do you feel about it. Do you believe that it's usually destructive? What did I say? Then up this end? And if you think it's not usually destructive, down at this end or somewhere in between, and you may pass, of course. All right? No. All right. Okay. Would you be seated? I'd like to talk about that a little bit. The five things that we did. The last one I did a little differently with the young people this morning. So this one would be living together down here. Number five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'd like to ask you some questions about, you know, where you grew up, where you live, where you're going on a trip, throw away, keep, Arab Israel, and then the living together. And the answer to this question, I assume, will be different for just about everybody. Which of these was easiest for you to take a stand on? Which was the easiest? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you're willing to share, which was easiest for you
three.
To get up on?
Throw
okay.
away one.
Throw away
one.
Trip one?
Well, yes.
Anybody?
The last two.
The last two were easiest, okay. Anybody else?
The first one.
First one was?
First one.
Okay. Which of these was the toughest to take a stand on for you? Doesn't
Arab
mean
Israel.
It was the most difficult?
Arab Israel.
Arab Israel was?
Last one.
Last one?
Mm-hmm.
Last one?
Arab Israel.
Okay.
First one.
Okay. Which is the one where you got the most quiet?
I thought the last one. Yeah, I think the last one.
Can't remember.
The deafening silence for me was on the Arab Israel one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is the one that you laughed about most? Right. Okay. Okay. Last question. If someone would have been observing you standing on the line, which do you think would have revealed most about you as a person? You're standing on the line for these. Which do you think would have revealed most about you as a person?
The last two.
All right, we have to answer for each for ourselves. Okay.
You're the most emotional.
If they are for you, okay. Yes.
Going on a trip, it really kind of, for me, wraps up the whole thing, my personality.
Okay. Someone else.
For me, it would be the stowaway or the save, because I find that most of the times that I can be extreme.
Ah, okay.
Well, I think one, because where we grew up and the environment we grew up in actually goes a long way of determining maybe the way in which we place ourselves in some of the other categories.
Okay. And what you were saying at that time is how you feel about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else? Anybody?
I think... myself would be the last one, because I've had a tendency, you know, to play it safe, and I really took a stand, you know, I thought, oh good, I'm going to really take a stand on this.
Hmm.
Then I was noticing lack of eye contact. The other ones would look around at each other.
Oh, is that right?
You know? That one was very, I felt, it was a very personal thing for me.
Uh-huh.
So I just
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? One more, and then we'll, believe me, we're heading for friendship. trust me. if we took these four things and just spread them around the room. I mean, would you hold this one in front of you, please? And would you, sir, hold this one in front of you? I don't know if everybody would be able to see them. And would you, sir, hold this? And how about that, girl? I've forgotten your name, Natalie.
Natalie,
yes. You're okay, too, huh, Natalie?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. We had an experience with some hot water and dishes this morning. I'm glad to see you. Can you see them now? This one is tell one person directly. Tell one person directly. Get physically active. Show it to the people up above, too, okay? And this one is get with other people. And this one is escape by... TV, pot, alcohol, could be sex on there, or whatever, reading, or something like that, okay? I'm asking you once again, if you would pick one of these as the way you would complete a sentence that I'll start for you, you'll want to mix them up, and that's very true. But for the moment, would you pick, force yourself to pick one of these, and finish the sentence this way. When I am lonely, I usually tell one person directly. When I'm lonely, I usually get physically active. When I'm lonely, I usually get with other people. Or when I'm lonely, I usually try to escape via some of these things. It could be sleep or other things on there, too. Now, they're not really mutually exclusive, and we can argue about that. But try to pick one of those, would you? We'll number them. One, two, three, four. One is tell one person directly, get physically active, get with other people, try to escape. You got one? You got one picked out? Usually I move people around again, but we won't have to do that. Okay, how many picked try to escape? Hold up your hand if you would. All right, fine. How many get with other people? Hold up your hand. All right, how many get physically active? Hold up your hand. And how many tell one person directly? All right, I'd like to chat about that a moment. I always forget to say this. When I'm talking about being lonely, I'm not talking about solitude, you know? Getting away by yourself in space and time. I'm talking about when it happens and you don't like it, you know, when it's uncomfortable, that kind of loneliness, all right? Well, now, how would you be willing to share? How many, somebody that said, hell, you can put them down now, thanks. That said that what they do when they're lonely is to try to escape by some kind of thing. How about sharing? Why that one rather than some of the others? Anyone who held up their hand?
Yeah, I read.
Mm-hmm.
I read
murder mysteries and all kind of exciting things like that. And one of the reasons is because there's lack of other people around to tell them about
it. I see.
Or not really much opportunity to be physically active.
I see. Okay. Someone else? Anyone else want to share?
I try to get with other people or talk to one person directly, which is to me almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer what I held up in my tell one person directly.
Okay. You want to see why that rather than some of the others?
Because usually you get some feedback and real sharing and a possibility of a growing relationship.
Okay.
So then that's, to me, the best antidote to long.
How about somebody who gets physically active? Why that? Yes.
I do, because, well, I do work, and I have worked for, well, I can be retired 30 years, December 28th this year. You know, I've been working some time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I can see I get things accomplished. As I said, I can put things off, and oh, I see. But when I really dig in, and I see that, I preferably, I like the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yard, garden, flowers, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if it comes to scrubbing a bedroom down or doing a floor, I have something accomplished, and I haven't got time to be lonely.
Hmm. Okay. Yes.
I usually get physically active because I go out and take a jog, so I feel like, for me, that's a good outlet, and I feel a lot better after a nice long jog.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone else. We get with other people, we had. That's another one. Someone want to talk about that? Held up your hand?
Sometimes when I'm on a business trip, I'm by myself on the trip, and I'm in a motel room, it's driving me nuts. The TV doesn't satisfy me.
Yeah.
And so I'll go out and I'll just sit in the coffee shop and I'll have coffee. And even though I may not engage in conversation with anybody, except maybe just a casual sentence with the waitress, nevertheless, there's people around me who are talking. And I sort of vicariously get involved and I feel better.
Hmm.
And then when I go back to the room, I just kind of go back to sleep or something.
Somebody else?
I think a lot of times I use all four of them. At different times
sure.
in my life.
Sure.
Sometimes I get active, sometimes I don't.
Surely. Is there one that you usually do?
I couldn't pick one out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How about upstairs? Anybody want to share? You did before? Anybody else?
TV is a good escape sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But it's also good to, I've just started to live by myself, so it's, to avoid loneliness, it's noise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also good to be alone and be lonely sometimes.
Well, solitude, I think so. I was trying to define loneliness as a real discomfort, but to be discomforted, be uncomfortable.
Even to be able to live through those times is good to.
Well, all right.
To do that.
Just so I just want to be sure we're talking about the same thing. Fine. Yes.
I was just sitting here thinking about loneliness is a. Sometimes it's a byproduct of something that happened or something someone said, or it's many times for me at least it's a fear. I'm feeling sorry for myself. And so I've had to kind of examine what loneliness is and
mm-hmm.
become content with the loneliness. And there's a big difference there. And
mm.
loneliness is something that just shouldn't be prolonged, I don't think. But it shouldn't be completely displaced
mm-hmm.
with any one of these things, because I think we need to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
But the loneliness is,
mm-hmm.
there's something we can do, it's in the mind and it's something we can do something about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, each speaks for himself. Right.
I agree with what you said about, you know, there might be something behind it, and that's where I like to go to one person and talk with them about it, or, you know, have them, maybe even just listen to them talk or vice versa, and if there's nobody around, I'll write a letter to somebody
mm-hmm.
that I know
mm-hmm.
wants to, would like to hear that I've talked real personally to.
Okay. Someone else, yeah.
I think dealing with loneliness has really given me a great deal of growth.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is to go with other people, and lots of times, if, you know, as a single woman or my own family is busy, then I sort of think, well, this is a challenge. You know, and I'll read in the paper that there's some concert or something. I sort of enjoy the picture of myself, this middle-aged woman, going to a rock concert by herself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time when I'm there and really associating with people. And that's been, I think, using, I think we maybe we're talking somewhat about the same thing, using the loneliness
mm-hmm.
as accepting it and growing from it.
Mm. I think there's a great deal of growth. I know that I've gained a lot of strength by walking through it. mm-hmm. and accepting what was happening to me and making it through to the next morning. Mm-hmm. And when I escape, I just feel so lousy. Mm-hmm. I feel as if I missed something that I was trying to let me to cope with.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
I would react to the word escape. I think that's a little too negative.
Oh, all right.
It seems to me that there are times in my life, if I'm lonely, when I may want to search. And some of the methods that have been mentioned, like reading, I think is a very positive way of searching at times.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other ways of what you call escape. But to me, mm-hmm. escape is a little too negative.
Oh, okay. Sure. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
But some of these terms are kind of negative. Pot and alcohol might be considered pretty negative ways of mm-hmm. not searching.
Hey, some of the people at my university would consider pot a very positive way. Oh, yes.
Okay.
And argue at length about it.
I'm sure you could find advice for each of these answers. mm-hmm.
I would think so. I think each of them is a form of escape, you know, but or maybe it's coping. Maybe it's a better word, coping. And then we could play with that, but that's fine. Whatever word you would choose there is perfectly agreeable with me. Somebody had a hand here.
You said one evening this week that Holden is a whole group of people who are lonely and come together.
Mm-hmm.
Yet
I said there were a lot. I think I said there were a lot of lonely people
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Yes, that I believe.
Yeah, I think loneliness is oftentimes very momentary or very
mm-hmm.
short-lived experience that
mm-hmm.
may have been generated by something that you might have missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that makes, for me, a lonely experience.
Okay. Anyone else?
A lot of opportunities.
It's interesting to me that early on when I was doing these things that I would ask people who among them gets lonely, and most people wouldn't agree that they did, but if you ask them what do you do when you get lonely, everybody tells. Sort of neat. There's a process involved. What's the opposite of loneliness for you? What's the opposite of loneliness for you?
Sharing.
All right.
Intimacy.
Friend.
Like what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sense of fullness.
Sense of appreciating
mm-hmm.
at the moment.
Comradeship.
Mm-hmm. That would be mine too. It would be around the arena of friendship, intimacy, comradeship. And that's what I'd like to say some things about. I'll just share what I think are some ingredients of friendship. I was amazed, as I've told I think some people already here at Holden, when I began exploring around in this area, I spent I think about a year just talking to people like, what's a friend? And just get reactions, and it was interesting to hear what was said. And I also checked the libraries. This has been at least 6-7 years ago now. In the Chicago area to find out what books had been written about friendship. And I was really amazed that the poverty of books about friendship. Now maybe it's something so good and so deep that we don't write about it, but I'm not so sure that was the case. I think that people just weren't. If you check the libraries today, I think you will find a good number of books that have come on the market in the last 6, 8, 10 years about friendship. I'm not espousing, I think I've been kidding about that, I think we already have too many books in the whole world, as an author, I say that, I don't know whether we should have any more, but it was interesting that people haven't maybe written very fully or broadly in this field until more recently. Did you want to add to that? Oh, I thought you were adding. Okay. But at least it led me to do some thinking about it and put some things together that I think may be considered ingredients to friendship. Some of it came, I know some of you are acquainted with Eric Byrne and his books, and the one that this little list comes out of, it's not accurate, I just didn't have the book with me, in his book Sex in Human Loving, which I happen to think is a fairly good book for an understanding of sexuality. I'll be referring to that again on Wednesday. I hope that everybody understands, when I think it's a good book, there may be an idea or a paragraph or a chapter or that. There's very few books that I would endorse all the way. I trust that that's the way people talk about books. And I feel that way about Byrne's book on sex and human loving. And in that book, he makes a list of kinds of human relationships. And it's certainly not meant to be exclusive by any means or, you know, a complete list. But he talks about people having acquaintances, our co-workers or fellow committee members or people that they admire or people they respect, and that then he thinks a turn-on takes place, which he's not sure what it is. Could be electrical, chemical, caused by the ions in the ionosphere or whatever it may be. He isn't quite sure it is, but he believes it happens. And that after that, possibly the move could be towards lechery, which he understands as devouring another human being, or if not lechery, which is in parentheses, then moving towards companionship and friendship and intimacy. Obviously, he doesn't try to say, now it just goes that way all the time. But there are people that we just say hi to, and it's not much more than that, or that we have a task, common task with, and then we cut off from them. Obviously, he doesn't try to say, now it just goes that way all the time. But there are people that we just say hi to, and it's not much more than that, or that we have a task, common task with, and then we cut off from them. Or the people that we begin to admire, there's something in them that it might be a quality, it might be a skill, it might be whatever it is that we not only look up to, but then eventually even get to say, I'd like to be something like that. And again, not logically, because it could be acquaintanceship to turn on, or it could jump all the way over there, but it moves towards something happening that causes a closeness, a desire to move towards knowing that person well and trying to get in close touch that we would call friendship. And for the moment, I'm going to be using the word friendship down towards this end. We tend to use the word friendship in a lot of ways. So we had a bunch of friends over Friday night. We may mean we had a lot of acquaintances and a couple of committee members and somebody from work and maybe a friend over last Saturday night. But we use the word loosely, and I think it's legitimate. I think there are levels of friendship. But I'm going to be talking about this end of it, the companion type, for instance. Good word, you know, companus, the one you have bread with, that you will eat that one's food, or the one you walk with, that kind of relationship. Or the friendship that we'll be talking about, or intimacy, which Byrne puts closer together at that end. My feeling about the ingredients for friendship, and I hope that you will share your own, are these five. I think that friendship consists of, and not exclusively, but in a way, there's a way of talking about friendship that means that friendship includes mutuality, trust, openness, risk, and gentleness. Let me say something about each one of them, then invite your response and additions, disagreements, questions, and whatever it may be. Mutuality, it seems to me, is crucial in that we usually are in some kind of a dependent relationship. Our mother carries us, our father does, and aunts and uncles, and if you got an older brother, it's our older sister, it's like this, or if you're the older brother or sister, it's often like this. And the teacher and the fireman, everybody else, it tends to be in this kind of a thing. Until we move, or even in competition, you know, I want to be on top and you're first, and the uniqueness keeps us moving towards something like that, and I think that's obviously a healthy part of our growing up. Until we move towards some level of mutuality, I don't mean a static thing where it's like that, but where the level is people coming at each other on the same range, where this person has something that this person respects or admires, and this person has something that this person respects or admires. They both move toward one another, sometime up, sometime down, but it's on a general kind of a range of mutuality. Many times it seems to me that what we call friendship are people trying to smooth out a dependent relationship. I do not believe, I think any of these relationships that Byrne talks about are useful, healthy, great relationships. And when we're talking about friendship, doesn't mean those others are not so good and friendship is the only. That would be very bad. I do not think you can carry a friend long. I think it becomes a dependent relationship, which is mighty useful, helpful, healthy relationship. Believe me, when I'm in the hospital and I want a nurse or a doctor taking care of me, I love this relationship. My wife says I enjoy ill health. I want to be taken care of. And that's very good. I do not think that it is a friendship. I think it is this way at times in friendships, indeed. You know, there are things that someone has, the other person needs, and it moves that way, but it moves back towards that other mutual relationship. I think that's very crucial for friendship. Secondly, I think that it includes trust. You don't know what really to say about trust. The more you think about it, the less you have to say about what it means to trust, it seems to me. Perhaps the ultimate meaning of friendship is the person that you can trust and the person that can trust you. Let me say it this way about my relationship to my friend. I happen to be married to a friend. Not everybody is, I guess, but I am, and I am glad. That when I don't think anybody trusts perfectly, but when I trust Jenny, in advance of anything happening, of her talking or doing or not talking or not doing, in advance of whatever happens, I assume that what she's going to do or not do, say or not say, is for my well-being and for the well-being of our relationship. Now, that's not easy. I don't kid anybody that it is easy for me or for anyone else to do that in advance, because I tend to react to stimuli like everybody else. And when I don't get my way or when I don't understand or whatever it is, it's very easy, you know, to believe it's not for my well-being or not for the well-being of our relationship. And trust, I believe, is indeed an emotion, among many things, I suppose, and I can't decide to trust. What is your name?
Sue.
Sue. If I said to Sue now, let's trust one another, and then I came over and started whispering in Sue's ear, Sue would have every right to be at least a little suspicious, because she doesn't know me, and I don't know her. She knew me for a couple of years. I think she would know how harmless I am, I keep saying. And if I whispered her ear, she might still trust me, I don't know. But we can't decide in advance to do that. That's something that grows out of the experience. Okay? The third is openness. I think friendship must include openness to the other person. We tend to say that one of the reasons we don't have many friends is that we aren't willing to be open to another person and reveal who we are. And I think that's true. I think another dimension of the difficulty with openness is our unwillingness to receive another person. I suspect we may be more afraid of knowing the other than we are even of letting the other know us, warts and all, and possibilities and potential and all. To let somebody else know how good you are about those things that you are good about, or to learn what the other person is really good at and about, potential, positives, whatever they may be called, is a fearful part of it. And openness means that if there's going to be mutuality, you can't be lying to one another. I don't believe that honesty or openness, as some people say, is the only virtue. You know, boy, I'm going to be totally honest with everybody. I don't believe that's even possible, really. And I think there are times when it's good, it's important for me to have myself. And I don't give myself away to everybody, even to my dearest friend, totally. So I think there are reasons at times not to be totally open with the other person, if you underscore the word totally. I think there is love sometimes dictates care much more than honesty. So I'm not worshiping at that shrine, if you understand. And yet saying openness, honesty is crucial to the relationship. The fourth for me is risk. and talk about that in a couple of ways at least. Again, if I would want to be a friend with Sue, I'm going to somehow let Sue know. If I really want to be a friend with Sue, I can say, Sue, I'd like to get to know you better, or I'd like to spend time with you, or whatever it is. And sure as shooting, here at Holden at least, or anyplace else, Sue could say no. And so the risk is letting myself be vulnerable and being said no to. And many of us don't have many friends, I would suspect, because we don't like to be said no to. The risk is pretty tough for many of us. And so we don't. Another part of it, though, is the risk of how much, let's say Sue and I agree we're going to be friends, how much do we give to each other? If I give all of myself to Sue, there ain't any Elmer left. It ain't a mutual relationship. Where I allow Sue to give all of herself to me, there's a nothing over there and it's all over here. That constant knowing of when and how much to give to each other, even after a friendship has been going for a long period of time, is part of the daily risk in the relationship. That doesn't mean it's going to necessarily break the relationship, but it's the struggle that's involved in it. So I think that's part of a risk also. And the third is the one I get in trouble with all the time. The risk of being willing to let the friend go. Mm-hmm. I think that many times when we talk about friendships, especially close friendships and intimacy, we border on meaning possessiveness. No human being possesses another. And so the willingness, if you push a friendship long enough, I mean you push this understanding long enough, I think it includes the willingness to let the friend go. Now that's tough to talk about, especially if you include friendship into the area of marriage. Because, you know, who wants to let go? I would fight all the way along against Ginny leaving me. It's even tough to talk about. My stomach gets all gnarled up when I would mention that subject. But I want to use that as an illustration. I'd fight it. And yet, at my best in a friend, I would also want with what for her she believes is really right for her. It would be tough for me to understand that, to accept that. And it seems to be at odds with the friendship. And I say, yeah, I think it is at odds. But I do not possess her, just as she does not possess me. Now, putting in other levels, of other levels of the relationships we're talking about, or friendships outside of the commitment that I believe is part of marriage, and we'll probably be talking about on Wednesday, if those who come, that risk, I think, is a very real one. And I think it's very difficult. And there's a whole chapter in Future Shock about how to get rid of friends. No, that's a bad verb. How to give up with friendships as we move and move around. It takes time to become a friend. I happen to have 3.5 friends. I'm married to one. I have one friend. He and I will celebrate our 40th anniversary of our friendship next month. It's a great friendship. If other than Ginny, if he called now, I would leave right where we are now. And I would ask Jan to take, and I'd go to wherever Carl is. And the same would be true for me. He would come wherever I am. There's no question about it. It took a long time to get there. He was there when my dad died. He preached at my mother's funeral. He married the two of us. He's a godfather for some of our kids. And all kinds of things have happened during the years. But it doesn't take time now. I cannot see Carl for months. And a telephone call in 3 minutes will take care of everything. Could. But it does take time to get there. But it isn't the possessing. Okay? The last I want to say is gentleness. I don't know if it's the right word. I think that it is gentleness. Could be sensitivity. If I'm, again, trying to establish a friendship with Sue, I'm somehow invading her territory. I say I want to be part of your whatever it is, your milieu, your space, your time. In a sense, that's an aggressive act, because I'm coming over there, I'm saying, hey, I'd like to know you, I'm moving towards you. Gentleness is that, all those things that we do, nonverbal and verbal, to let someone know that in spite of the fact that we want to invade your territory, we do not want to hurt. I don't mean namby-pamby. I don't mean all that other stuff. I mean the care and concern for the other, so that person remains a whole and you remain a whole at the same time in that mutual relationship. I spent some time about 5 years ago talking to women of different ages in different parts of the country, asking them what they looked for in a relationship with a man. Every one of the women that I talked to, because I made notes after the conversations, mentioned gentleness, some form of gentleness, not that word each time. If, as I believe, women in our society, not congenitally, but in our society, are better at gentleness than men, I think that's true. I do not mean that men cannot be gentle. I do not mean there aren't gentle men. I think there are some very gentle people here at Holden. I'm very impressed with the gentleness that I've experienced from men as well as women. But if it's true that women are better at it for whatever reasons in our society, then I think it means that women are going to have to teach men about gentleness. And if that's true, that means that men are going to have to be willing to learn from women about gentleness. I think that that's an important aspect of the relationship. You notice I've talked about friends without talking about love. But that's my definition of love. I have biblical roots. I think what our Lord in John 15 said, I no longer, to his most intimate associates, said, I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends. I think this is what he was talking about. And I could make a case, and somebody probably would say I'm maybe trying to force God into this image of God's willingness to be mutual with us, and indeed his trust, and indeed his openness, and indeed his risk, and indeed his gentleness. You know, when he came into this world, he could have blown it sky wide and handsome. But he came as a baby. That was no accident. We have some time to respond about friendship.
I was just feeling, even though we're strangers, but there's a feeling of friendship in this room. A very nice, warm, I'm experiencing a very warm feeling of friendship in this group.
The willingness on the line to be open a little bit about ourselves, especially the last couple, which were sort of toughies, I think contributes, I think, to some of it.
I was thinking, I like your definition of friendship, and I'm a school teacher, and I so often have parents who come to me and say, Mrs. Bruffy, my child has no friends, Mrs. Bruffy, and there's nothing more devastating to be 8 years old and be left out of things. Because, you know, we could talk about it an older age being a growing process, but at 8 years old, it just hurts. And so some of the things that if you have said are things that I'm trying to internalize that maybe I can be a help to some of these children. Because you do gimmicky things like putting them on a committee together with a popular child. But if some of these other ways, like openness and gentleness and some of those things can be utilized.
Yes.
One of the old saws about being sure that we ourselves are good friend material are certainly valued. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of old, you know, in order to have been here to be one.
It's really weird, isn't it, that when you set out to be a friend, you probably will fail, and yet at the same time, if you aren't open to being a friend, you probably will too. It's really a nip and tuck kind of a thing. I mean, you know, you set out now, you've had people say, we're going to move in on you come hell or high water, and you know what happens to that.
But I was thinking about her little kid with no friends.
Sure.
That's sometimes kind of obvious because maybe they hate everybody that comes near her.
Sometimes, yeah.
And this can be carried over to
well. Somebody else.
I think that taking the risk of losing the other person is most difficult.
Yeah.
And that most of us, if we're really honest, do hang on pretty tight once we've made friends.
Yeah.
Established a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that you can usually talk it out or talk it through and at that point grow closer.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that I've really noticed, I have a girlfriend, she and I share an apartment together, and I don't know, before we decided to move in together, you know, we were just good friends, you know, but now it almost seemed like we were kind of stifling one another, but now I've been open with her, you know, to share how I felt that maybe we needed to, you know, be more free from each other, you know, more with we wanted to do, and she was able to accept that and understand that, so I think that really helped.
Another thing, I don't know, it's the common interest that finally binds you together, and I think that's important to mention.
Yeah. I put it within the category of mutuality, but it could be lifted up, surely. You know, there has to be some things that you can revolve around, but I'd be very willing to add that, surely.
Friendships have to grow sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
We've all had friends that we've had during certain periods of need,
sure,
or certain periods of being able to help somebody, and then when that period is gone, either one or both persons will feel well, or they'll just gravitate away.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you come to a friendship which can back off each person and examine what's going on and grow with the friendship.
Mm-hmm.
That's rare, and I'm speaking as a single person because I assume that this is what happens in married situations where people do grow together and stay together through the tough and the fun stuff.
To talk about it in a dynamic rather than static thing, you know, that ebbs and flows in any one of those areas, you know, because of needs and changes and growth and all that stuff, I think that would be very important to do with any kind of friendship, a long term or short, I mean, less years. You know, when today's English version of the scriptures translates reconciliation as God making friends out of enemies. And I think that's a good, obviously good and helpful term. But if we really don't know much about a friend, then it doesn't have as much of a meaning to us. And I guess I would push at it for also our understanding of what the Christian gospel is about. I have a thing. I did a study of some congregations of some years ago, and I espouse friendship as a model for the relationships in a parish. That's not often done. In fact, when I was taught at seminary, I was taught precisely not to do that, not to make friends, because that's the worst thing you could do, which I think is grossly inaccurate. But I found in the parishes that most of the pastors had no friends. And so if they talked friendship and had no friends, the possibility was they really didn't know what they were talking about. And that would be very sad. I'm now moving from that illustration to all of us, that if we really are talking about the gospel as reconciling, making friends out of enemies, or however you would talk about it, experiencing what that is about in our own life may well help us to understand what the message is. So I think it has value all by itself, friendship, but I think it also has a value in an understanding of what God is about among us, if he is friend and is in the business of making friends out of enemies. Anyone else?
When you advocated this friendship in the congregation, what was the result in some congregations?
Well, we did this very slowly because we had to grow and learning about it. For instance, let me use an example. At one point, we asked each of the pastors, there were 29 participating congregations, and I spent time not only with the clergy, with the members, of course, as well. We asked the pastors to spend time with a member of the congregation for with no agenda other than to getting to know that person. We did not talk friendship to the person, but just to do that. 19 of the pastors agreed to participate. Most of them even picked the person and said why. Two interesting things happened. Each one of them picked a man. I never said man. I always said a member of the congregation. Each one of them picked a man. None of the 19 got together with the person they chose. None. The committee that I worked with wouldn't believe it. They wanted to go out and check them, but none did. I think the thing, that's when we got to some of this other understanding. There were two things that we were doing. I think we were asking some of them to do something they had never done before. And that was to be, I'm not your pastor, I am Elmer, and you are Jan, and we talk. They were so used to role that it was very difficult. The other is that I think they figured they had much to lose and nothing to gain. That if someone got to know me as a human being, they had been burned. The ultimate, and please, now this would be, I always risk this one, that people would quote this and nothing else. I talked to one pastor about, I said, sounds like you don't trust those people in your parish. And he says, I wouldn't trust one of those sons of bitches for anything. He had been burned. He had been burned more than once. And he wasn't gonna reach out. No way was he gonna reach out. He outlived them in the parish. Each time, you know. They went and then he was back in the saddle. It was really tough. So it didn't get very far. We still espouse it. I still do wherever I go, as friendship being a model for that relationship. My contention is, when I'm in trouble, I'll turn to a friend. We talk about objectivity and all that stuff. There is a place for objectivity, but when I'm in need, I want the person I can talk. If I want objectivity, I'll go to that doctor, nurse, or whoever else it is. But I'll also go to the person who is closest to me that can help me.
Often the reason that a pastor can't be friends with people in his parish is that he deals with them in crisis situations.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And when they're in pain and when this situation passes, there's another crisis. I don't know if he has the time and energy to be friends on a non-crisis.
Yeah, that's very possible. The problem, obviously, with that is, we talked about that, the pastors really were oriented to crises, is that then he tends not to deal with people towards their potential,
mm-hmm.
but only to solve the problem. Right. And that is really terrible. Terrible only because it's so lopsided.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow really, the honest pastors...
And then you begin to see the people on the
exactly.
negative side.
They're all... Mm-hmm. And that's why he takes the doctor model, often takes the medical model of the relationship. The teacher model or the medical model? Up here, down here. They're in need, I've got what they need, I'll give it to them. Rather than any possibility of mutuality.
I think so often two congregations can put a pastor in
amen.
That place.
Yeah.
Oh, amen.
A lot of ministers, I have a very good friend who's a single
sure.
minister,
sure.
and he just hates that role he gets
sure.
put into. So
but
I think we have to think of it from both sides.
Clearly, I believe that the pastors we have in our parish today are exactly what the laity ask for, and I'll lay it on to any laity. The laity knew that the pastor didn't know him and loved it. Loved it. If they know he knows me, he might really begin to talk to me about those things that are mine. Keep it the way it is, Pastor. Love it. Keep busy. Do all the things. Keep the role so that you're over there and I'm here. Yeah. Sure, I wouldn't lay that on the clergy at all. I started out a little anti-clergy in that study and I ended up terribly, terribly, terribly supportive. I cried, literally, a lot about what had happened. By clergy's own fault. I don't mean to say it on one side or the other, but what happened to our clergy. When they were sitting there alone, baffling like that, or without friends, or laying it all on their spouse, because there was no other way. That was really, really sad.
Is that changing?
I think it is in some places. I don't think it is. I don't think it is changing with youth by any means. Some of the young people that are in the clergy and some of the young people in the parishes really were sewed into the same place. But sometimes it is, I think. I haven't been close enough to really say much more now. I don't mean just being younger. Sometimes they say, well, we get some younger pastors in, then it'll be changed.
Oh, I see.
I don't think younger pastors have changed that, or younger people in the congregation have necessarily, by virtue of being young, have changed it. That's what.
It can be different, though.
Yes, it can.
Pastor Joe, who is here with us, this big group from Christ Lutheran, he's leading us, and we're all wondering how we're going to get through the goodbye ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
We've done so much with the Kleenex box at the
yeah.
end of each pew, because he has so many of those qualities, the openness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's willing to take the risk. We have a very unusual, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
obviously, situation here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, I came from a church where the pastor was in this role here,
mm-hmm.
and we were here. And I didn't even know that there was another kind of relationship
yeah.
that could exist until we came where we are now. So the thought of Pastor Joe leaving just sort of devastates me in some
mm-hmm.
ways, although I know God, with his embroidery work, has everything all
mm-hmm.
worked out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just seeing the cross thread.
Yeah.
And but he has this quality.
Yeah.
And he makes friends. He's not
mm-hmm.
just a pastor. He's so open and
mm-hmm.
honest. And has had things moving so deeply in the pulpit when he's giving a sermon that he would break down and cry.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just such a warm, loving person that he's
mm-hmm.
going, God, I know, will use him mightily for everything. So there is
sure.
there is hope.
And sharing that is important. For those who are experiencing it, to share it with those who are not is very important. Mm-hmm. Thanks much. Time to eat.
Thank you.